Jersey is the world.
Hi, everybody. Chris Gethard here. Welcome to New Jersey is the World. Every week we get together, we talk about something regarding New Jersey. I want to say hi to everybody who is over at patreon.com/New Jersey is the World. We are always putting out extra episodes, conversations. The comment sections when episodes pop off are amongst the funniest things in my life. I don't think I've ever been scolded more than in the episode where we realize none of us have ever stepped foot in the large majority of Bergen County. It's such a good time. If you're a member over at patreon.com/New Jersey is the World, guess what? We're doing a St. Patrick's Day 1-2 punch, and you've already gotten private recollections of the personal experience of attending the West Orange St. Patrick's Day parade from myself and Mike T. And this, of course, dealt with such heavy-hitting topics as how come in my neighborhood, the funeral home where every funeral you went to was also a place where you could go and pay $5 to $10 and drink as a teenager with cops? How many kids went blind in the first few years of Silly String? How much money did I personally give to the IRA without realizing it in the 80s and 90s at the West Orange St. Patrick's Day Parade, as well as the microeconomy of shopping cart-based parade salespeople and that whole underground economy? It was a very fun conversation, and thanks to everybody who has signed up at the Patreon. And Mike D, now we're here on the main feed, and we're going to include everybody else. So if you want the private West Orange personal recollections, you got to sign up over at patreon.com/New Jersey is the World. But Mike D, now we're going to spread it out. We're going to talk about St. Patrick's Day and its impact on New Jersey as a whole.
We are. And I'll just go on record that St. Patrick's Day is my personal least favorite day of the year. I find St. Patrick's Day scary and threatening. And I often have years, especially when I'm sure maybe newer listeners don't know, but I did live in New York City for almost 20 years. And I made it a point to never go to work that day because I didn't want to ride the subway, and to never go out and do any St. Patrick's Day activity because I think people act absolutely insane. And I think that's what we're going to talk about today.
I will say, growing up, my grandmother was born in County Wexford. She immigrated when she was 4. My grandfather was born in Armagh, Northern Ireland. He immigrated when he was 18. My mom was first generation, obviously. And I can tell you, my grandma was the deputy grand marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade. She really cared. But my mom had a real aversion to St. Patrick's Day. She liked everybody being out in the neighborhood and coming by the yard. She used to make green pistachio pudding for us on St. Patrick's Day, which was a pretty great mom move. But there were a lot of families in the neighborhood, and also some who used to live in the neighborhood and were coming back, where they'd be, you know, third, fourth generation, and they'd show up with the big sweaters and you know, all of a sudden they're carrying shillelaghs. And my mom used to refer to those people as rah-rah Irish, just the people who needed you to know that they had like 10% Irish blood in their veins and would not shut up about it, and who get drunk on the streets. And my mother always used to be like, I don't know, man, a lot of these people who are shouting about St. Patrick's Day, it's these rah-rah Irish people. And she's like, my parents barely talk about Ireland. My grandfather never really talked about Ireland with my mom. They all left for a reason, you know?
My family's from Leitrim, which is, you know, County Leitrim on the Shannon River in Ireland. And I cannot ever once, the only time I ever heard my grandfather on that side speak about Ireland was when he went back as a much, much older man. I think he was probably in his late 60s, early 70s. And he went back then, and he thought it was, you know, kind of interesting. But my entire life, never once was he like, you know what I really miss? Ireland. You know, that never. And I know Ireland is a vastly, vastly different place now than it was even 25 years ago, but never mind 70, 80, 100 years ago.
And I think there was a lot of pride in being Irish with my grandparents. I think there was a lot of concern about the state of things in Ireland, especially in the 80s. That was very, very real for them to watch it from afar, having been in the States for decades. But I'll also say, I think you'll remember this, when Coniglio's Pizza first started catching buzz, you were one of the first people that reached out to me. It's fun because where I live now, I've realized there's friends of mine from other parts of the state where Coniglio's is now an excuse for them to hang out with me. And you and I hang out enough, but you were like, I'm bringing the family over. We have to try this place. And I was like, it's great. I started going right when it opened because it's like 12 minutes from my house. And you came over on a Sunday. We did not realize it was the day of the Morristown St. Patrick's Day Parade. And we talked about it last year on the podcast, but
that's right.
I still think about that day. I would rather be airdropped into an active war zone than have to go to Morristown 3 hours after their St. Patrick's Day Parade ends.
I mean, not even discounting the logistics of that, such as insane traffic, every street being closed off. I'm pretty sure that in the 15 minutes it took me to jump out of your car and grab the pizzas to go from Coniglio's, I saw two people break their own legs because they were so drunk. They just sort of like collapsed off the curb. I mean, that is, and it was what, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's a rough.
And I've
holiday.
Been to the Morristown Parade. Don't get me wrong. The parade itself, great. I'm always down to see some weird guys who bang on bass drums and people who play tin whistles. And you're like, do you practice this all year just to do this in a few St. Patrick's Day parades around the state of New Jersey? That's awesome. God bless you. The hours after, the aftermath, I would dare say more disturbing than the aftermath of the West Orange Parade. Although, to be fair, growing up, most of the people who were drunk on the streets or adults urinating in front of children, those were usually people who I knew them and knew their families. So maybe it was just less offensive to my sensibilities. Morristown is all college age kids, though.
That's a difference, too. Is to me, there's, I mean, I like your mom calling them rah-rah Irish. I call them House of Pain Irish. Mm-hmm, in my mind, mm-hmm. That's the right time frame, you know. People who break out their Celtics jersey one day a year, and you know, a moth-eaten fake Aran Island sweater, which I don't even know what those things are for and why Irish people wear them, because there is a very specific reason why they wear those sweaters, and it just turns into mayhem, and it's very difficult to deal with that. Do you know the sweater thing? It's actually super interesting.
I spent time in Ireland where those sweaters are like pushed very heavily to tourists. And I know the Aran Islands are like a super, I think we went to one of them and rode bikes on it. And they're super desolate and people were forced to move out there to kind of flee their past lives. But I don't know the specifics of the sweater. I might have known at one point, but if I did, I forgot.
It's actually, of course, very morbid because we are talking about Ireland as fits. So that like a lot of parts of Ireland, but that part, like you said, islands, fishing culture going back hundreds, if not thousands of years. And if you actually see a real Aran Island sweater, right, they have the knitting on them. But what people don't realize is every family has their own specific knitting pattern. And the reason that they're knitted differently, and this is the morbid part, is if you were a fisherman and you got washed overboard and you drowned and your body washed up a month, 6 months, 2 years later, your family would be able to identify it by the pattern on the sweater because that wouldn't rot, whereas your body would have rotted away and not been able to be identified. So morbid, but true, and kind of interesting, actually.
When I was there, we spent weeks driving around. We started in Belfast, went to my grandfather's village, which was eye-opening. Then we drove down the whole eastern coast of Ireland, from Northern Ireland all the way down to Dingle. I also spent a bunch of time in Dublin. And I have said since that trip, I was like, Ireland is the most beautiful place I've ever seen. And it's full of the kindest people you will ever meet. And you are always 30 seconds away from the saddest conversation you have ever had. We were in Galway and we went into this church. It was just, you know, we were just wandering around. Galway was amazing. Like all the amount of stuff that you could just bounce from thing to thing, walk around. All of a sudden you're eating. All of a sudden there's like people playing traditional music upstairs at a pub. It was great. And I remember we wandered into a church at one point and there were these different sort of plaque, tombstone looking things donated by different families. Most of them just said which of the families put up the money for them. And then one of them had a very detailed story about a child whose head was run over by a wagon. And it was like in depth up on the wall of this church. And I was just like, man, like we don't have to explicitly mention the child whose head was run over. And this is a tribute to the kid whose head got run over by a wagon, Ireland. I'm just trying to enjoy this beautiful place.
Like every week, the family from that parish that goes to that church, and they need to relive in graphic detail the story of their child being graphically run over by a wagon and having their head crushed.
At one point, we went on a walking tour of Galway, and they showed us the square where JFK spoke at, when he was president. And, you know, and they laid it out that it was monumental. Like the Irish Catholics who fled to the United States, now all these decades later, one of them is the president. And it was huge. And then the person like talked about what an inspiring thing this was and said, and you know, to speak here of all the squares was particularly meaningful because of course, hundreds of years prior to JFK, this is where Catholics were hung by Protestants. You're just like, we can just, guys, can we just enjoy the JFK thing for like 30 seconds?
It's true. If you think, so I think Derry Girls is possibly my favorite TV show ever. I go back and forth between a couple, but that is up there. It's both the funniest thing that I've ever watched. I laugh to myself into pain, into chest pain watching it, but everything they're talking about is really not funny at all. It's horrifying, you know?
It is absurdly hilarious. And it's one of those shows that like, it starts to hit that like 30 Rock kind of goal of like, oh, every single line is a punchline. They don't even do setups anymore. Just it's punchline, punchline. How do you even do that? The writing is brilliant. But I would say every third episode, something happens where I'm like, oh man, that stretch of life in that area of the world is one of the most grim places to exist. And it was part of the United Kingdom. I mean, when I went to my grandfather's village, the schools are still segregated today, or at least as of 2016 when I went there, still segregated, Catholic and Protestant in the area where my grandfather grew. I was like, we're in the United Kingdom. You can't have segregated schools. They were like, well, guess what, fucko? We do. So shut up. Mike D, I think this is a nice segue to talk about some of the research you've been finding on St. Patrick's Day in general, and specifically some New Jersey-focused aspects of it that we're going to talk about today.
It is. And then later on, I also have a special monologue, which I've written for you, that I'll be requesting that you perform, which is not something we normally...
I did not go ahead and read
it
ahead of time. So you'll be
I have it in a separate document.
I'll go in blind.
For that reason.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't go to the end of this existing document because I was scared to stumble upon it, but you have hidden it from me. Okay, good to know.
Where do we start? You know, there's so many things, but of course I'm going to eventually get to all the things that are bad about St. Patrick's Day in New Jersey. But one of the first things, right, that I think is interesting to talk about is supposedly there was one town in New Jersey, and I've been researching this, so I'm going to put this out to our audience if anyone can confirm this, but I found several stories online that claim one New Jersey town elected a mayor who used to dress as a leprechaun. And I feel like we need to confirm or deny this story, because if it's true, it's got to be the greatest story ever, that somehow to appeal to the Irishness of his constituents, this man, this mayor dressed up as a leprechaun was actually elected mayor. To me, this is...
Do you know which town it was?
I don't, but I found a dozen references to this, and I spent an inordinate amount of time trying to track this down, which makes me think it might be some kind of internet rumor, but I'd be very sad if that's true, because there's a lot of references to this.
I hope it's true. And as we start talking about this too, we have to say, I do think, obviously, Irish Americans are one of the biggest ethnic groups present in the state. I think one of the real tricks of New Jersey is that for a lot of areas of the state, if you really had to boil down a lot of why people love it when they love New Jersey, I think that a lot of areas of the state, it could be as simple as we eat like Italians and we drink like the Irish. Like that's kind of New Jersey if you want to boil it down. On my old Taylor Ham, Egg and Cheese album from years ago, I said, like, if you grow up in New Jersey, everyone winds up a little Irish. You got a little Italian in you. There's a little Jewish in there and all many, many other ethnic groups. But I think if you boiled it down to the people who are like, Jersey's rad, if you had to say it in one sentence and you weren't allowed to explain any further, it might just be, we eat as good as Italians and we drink like the Irish. And that's kind of New Jersey at its core.
I think that's true. Do you remember this St. Patrick's Day tradition, which is related to being Italian as well? But when you were younger for St. Patrick's Day, did you have multiple people in your family who had threatened to paint your ass green on St. Patrick's Day? This was something that I heard frequently. And then I was often chastised by my Italian grandfather, and he'd be like, look, you're half Italian and half Irish, so you only get one ass cheek painted green on St. Patrick's Day.
That does not ring a bell for me, but I would love hearing that. I would love to hear if anybody else with the Italian-Irish crossover felt that, because the tension between those two groups is often hilarious as well. The two most similar immigrant groups in maybe American history, Italian Catholics, Irish Catholics, who have a real bond and also a weird simmering tension that if you grow up in one, or in your case, both groups, you start to sense at some point. I love it. We got to find out which town had a mayor who dressed as a leprechaun. We also have to, I bet there's more than one.
Imagine that. It was probably an early 20th century trend that was burned very hot for a couple of years and then died out. I feel like that is a very Jersey thing, right? Like Sam Patch, the Jersey jumper, he was part of a whole trend for a couple of years in New Jersey of people jumping off very high things, and then that quickly died out.
I did just Google John McKeon leprechaun. He was the mayor of West Orange after Sammy the Bulldog Spina, before he went on to become an assemblyman and now state senator. I wouldn't put it past McKeon to dress up as a leprechaun with that last name. Sammy the Bulldog Spina would never be caught dead in leprechaun garb. But when you Google John McKeon leprechaun, all that comes up is drawings of leprechauns, leprechaun costumes, and a lot of pictures of the horror movie Leprechaun specifically, which I don't know what that says about John McKeon. Anyway. What else did you find in your research, Mike D, about our relationship in New Jersey with this legendary holiday?
So one thing that, to the point about Italian and Irish working together, was that in Trenton, Italian and Irish immigrants had a very long-standing feud over many years, which would often devolve into gang-related violence in Trenton for many years. But every year on St. Patrick's Day, they would gather at one of the small churches in Trenton, and they would eat, tell stories, play music together, and actually sort of call a truce to this gang warfare. So I think that's actually nice. So Trenton's in the spirit of Irish and Italian unity.
Love that. Love that.
Which is pretty funny. That at one point they used to make the Passaic River green like they did in Chicago, which I think is hilarious because the Passaic River is often green without anyone needing to dump anything into it at all. So it's almost like St. Patrick's Day every day of the year in the Passaic River.
That is a grim, the overall sludgy greenish brown appearance the other 364 days of the year. I wonder if they were to do the research of exactly what happened to pollute the Passaic River, it was like, oh, it was all the green dye from the different St. Patrick's Day celebrations that mixed with the chemical waste. That's why it's so bad.
It would be nice if on St. Patrick's Day it actually was clear for a day.
Oh, that would be one, if you were allowed to swim
one day
for one
a year
day
it's
in
not
the
green.
River.
Which I would not recommend doing. Have you ever swam in the Passaic River? I never have.
No, I've canoed and kayaked in stretches of it. Starting in that, there's that nature center up at the top of Eagle Rock Avenue, either Roseland or East Hanover at my crossover. I've dropped a raft into there and paddled around in it in some of the stretches before it starts to get industrial, but I've never swam, nor will I ever swim in the Passaic River, unless that is how I choose to die someday.
To be hurled into the Passaic River.
That would be, if I ever voluntarily swim in the Passaic River, it would be part of a suicide attempt. Yes.
Maybe we could have like an Irish Viking funeral for you where we, where we put you on like a canoe and send you sailing down the Passaic River and then light it on fire with arrows from the shore.
As you know, there was a stretch of my life where, because me and your brother once almost died doing this in the Delaware and Raritan Canal, there was a stretch where I got into the idea that I should be doing more paddling, but instead of actually getting a worthy craft or doing any research into how it works, I just went and bought like a literal two-person yellow and blue inflatable raft from a toy store. And when we were in our early 20s, me and your brother went down the DNR canal in the middle of the night and almost died when we came feet away from accidentally plummeting down a giant culvert in the middle of the night. And I later used the same raft actually out on the Passaic.
How did you get back from where you started? You must have had to paddle really hard.
We wound up bailing. We were going to try to go from that East Hanover area, and we were going to try to make it. It was me and my friend Pat and our friend Mo, three of us on this fucking toy thing. And we were going to try to make it all the way from that East Hanover area to the stretch that went behind the Sports Authority at the Willowbrook Mall. That was our end goal. And we wound up bailing out somewhere in Lincoln Park, and we wound up getting out in someone's backyard where we were attacked by their goats. A bunch of goats started chasing us in our raft, and our friend's brother had to come pick us up. He was going to pick us up at the mall, but I think he may have called the Passaic County police at one point, and they were prepping a boat to come try to find us because it was like, oh, we'll be there in like 2 hours or something. We didn't know. We were complete idiots. We were complete morons. But it was also weird because you'll be back there sometimes and you'll be in those areas back behind like the Big Peace Meadows up in Fairfield, and there'll just be someone fishing. Like, I remember us passing a guy who was fishing and he didn't say hello, and it's like, man, I don't even know how you got back here. But if you had a gun, you could kill us and no one would know about it. It was a weird vibe, the whole experience. Anyway, we're off track. Let's focus up. I know, when I think St. Patrick's Day in New Jersey, I do know that Hoboken had a long history with St. Patrick's Day, but also a history that got so insane that I believe they no longer have their St. Patrick's Day celebrations. Well,
if you want to jump into this, I've researched this extensively, specifically because I feel that Hoboken is the epicenter of House of Pain Irishness in New Jersey, right? I mean, that is the Hoboken brand, right?
It's true.
So there's a number of things that have led to this Hoboken having to essentially cancel St. Patrick's Day. Although I don't know that it's officially canceled anymore, but it's greatly downscaled and policed now. So this one, I mean, you know that I laugh at things that are not funny, but I'm not going to be able to help myself. So in March of 2015, a man set himself on fire during the Hoboken St. Patrick's Day pub call. The police received a phone call just after 11 p.m. that a man was trying to set himself on fire. Once they arrived, they've discovered that the unidentified man was indeed on fire in the middle of the road in the area where 25 bars had signed up to participate in the pub crawl. The man began screaming as the fire started to spread from his jacket to his skin, but officers were able to get him onto the ground and roll him over and put it out. He was not seriously injured, but was transported to Hoboken University Medical Center. And then the pub crawl continued business as usual, with 11 people arrested for everything from assault to drug possession. And there were also over 100 violations of city ordinances barring public drinking and urination. But the level of drunkenness that has to happen for you to willingly set yourself on fire is pretty high.
It's madness, obviously, and speaks to drunkenness, some combination of drunkenness, mental illness. Also, I would argue there's probably a lot of times to stop someone from lighting themselves on fire. It also makes me think too, you know, St. Patrick's Day in Hoboken is a day where I would imagine that a lot of, like you said, House of Pain Irish, but also just general North Jersey morons descended upon Hoboken to have a good time. Can you imagine if you're just some like 24, 25 year old who's like, let's go meet up with the bros, let's get fucked up in Hoboken. And then you have to live forever with the image that someone went so overboard that your St. Patrick's Day ended with a human being on fire. Like, that sticks with you. With you forever.
It's not something that you're gonna forget. But you know, that's really just the tip of the iceberg for Hoboken. So the Hoboken chief of police put out a statement that he was extremely disturbed after the annual St. Patrick's Day leprechaun, and that's like lepra, C-O-N, like leprechaun convention, bar crawl with little people in costumes, ended in 15 arrests. So, you know, there was 15 arrests, 54 tickets, 35 hospitalizations. Former college football player Christopher Smallwood, 24, broke a detective's ribs and dislocated a sergeant's shoulders. Leprechaun started in 2012 after the city's annual St. Patrick's Day parade was suspended due to the chaos in 2010. And apparently the event, the Leprechaun, cost the city $111,000 in overtime wages for police officers for working 12 to 16 hour shifts. So my understanding is they would have an event called Leprechaun where they would hire little people to dress up as leprechauns for the entertainment of House of Payne Irish, and they would wander Hoboken, and this just devolved into basically people fighting the police. I mean, that's 54 tickets and 35 hospitalizations and 15 arrests from one event. I mean, that's pretty intense. The hospitalizations especially.
It's really, really nuts. It also, one thing I have thought about often in life, if you are in entertainment and a little person, God damn, like some of these casting notices come across. I bet every St. Patrick's Day you get the notice of like, hey, want to go be a leprechaun at an event? And my guess is that some of those people are just people that were like, I need a fucking gig. And the next thing you know, they're watching Goombas fight cops as they're dressed as a leprechaun. I'm like, oh, no. Like, there's no way all of the little people, some of those little people were probably drunk and part of the revelry. Some of those little people were just like, I should not have agreed to do this because now there's people trying to push cops into the Hudson River.
There's an episode of Boardwalk Empire where that's a plot point, if you remember.
Really?
Yeah. So there's one of the clubs, I think it's one of the clubs that Nucky owns, has some relationship with a group of little people who are actors, and they hire them for all the holidays. So at, you know, I think it was Valentine's Day, you know, they dress up as Cupid. St. Patrick's Day, they dress up as leprechauns. And there's a pretty extended scene that I recall where it's basically all the actors in sort of their locker room, and they're complaining that they're having to put on like a leprechaun outfit. And basically they go and shake down Nucky for more money because they think they aren't being paid enough. And Nucky's kind of like, hey, like, come on, like, what other gig are you going to get here? Like, this is good money, you know. But they eventually shake Nucky down and get a few more bucks out of him to continue this tradition to dress up.
This conversation also reminds me of maybe my favorite piece of video footage ever filmed, which is, of course, the Halloween episode of Al Roker. What was he on, the Today Show or Good Morning America? One of them. Have you seen the Halloween episode where they hire two little people to play Ewoks for a Star Wars themed
I have seen this
segment. For anybody not familiar who's listening, do yourself a favor, just Google Al Roker drunk Ewoks. It will come up. It's Halloween, so it's off target for St. Patrick's Day, but again, tying into the idea that the actors who are little people get put in these positions all the time. Again, you can very clear, they had a thing, we're all going to dress as Star Wars characters, and here's some Halloween-themed cocktails you can make for your adult trick-or-treaters. And you can tell these two little people got drunk in the green room and were like, fuck these Ewok gigs. And they go out and start breakdancing and humping the floor. One of them runs over and tries to have sex with Al Roker's leg at one point. And here's the thing. I'm spoiling major parts of it, and I still am doing no justice to the amount of joy you will get out of watching this mayhem. There's no amount of spoiling. If you have not seen it, pause this episode you're listening to and just watch the Al Roker drunk Ewoks video. It is one of the greatest pieces of live mishap that's ever happened on television. And I love it. And it has actually brought me out of depression at times. And that's saying a lot.
In your acting career, has anyone ever asked you to dress up as a leprechaun?
Oh, as a leprechaun? No. I'm trying to think what the most degrading things I've ever done are. There's two that come to mind, Mike D, if we're just going to go down this rabbit hole. Is one, I was in an H&R Block commercial that I made a lot of money on in my commercial acting days. And for people who don't know, generally you start in comedy, acting, whatever, and you're doing stage stuff. And then kind of your first step towards making money as an actor is generally in commercials. There's tons and tons of auditions and you just go on a bunch of them. And you still don't make much money, but if you hit one, you can hit big. And I did hit big with an H&R Block commercial, which aired a ton, and where I was wearing lederhosen. That's probably the closest I've personally come. I was also in a commercial for Decon Mousetraps, where I was the straight man, and another guy from UCB was in the commercial, and he was dressed as a giant sweaty mouse, but his face, it was not covering his face, and the costume was terrible. And I remember so distinctly thinking, thank God. You know, initially as a comedian, you book the part that's the straight man role. And you're like, man, I want to do the funny one. I want to be the one who shows off the funny, not the like flummoxed straight role. In that one, pretty quickly, I was like, thank God. I also remember that costume was so hot that they kept shoving air conditioner, like corrugated tubes down his neck in between takes to just blast air conditioning. And I'm like, that can't be good either, that they're just blasting air conditioning directly into your spine and shoulders. Like, there's no way you're not going to wind up at a fucking chiropractor's office after that. Point being, I've done a couple degrading acting gigs. There's some others that I'm sure if I racked my brain would come to mind, but never a leprechaun. Never a leprechaun.
In my work life, I had an interesting St. Patrick's Day related shame that I was a huge part of, which was, I guess about 10, 12 years ago, I think some people might remember this. All of a sudden, this new holiday appeared called Arthur's Day, and it was named after Arthur Guinness, the founder of Guinness, the stout, the beer.
I vaguely remember this.
And I was heavily involved with creating this new fake drinking holiday to celebrate. And it's related to St. Patrick's Day because at the time, Guinness was my client. And as you can imagine, every year around St. Patrick's Day, they sell an ungodly amount of Guinness, which, you know, I guess somehow that's been linked to St. Patrick's Day. And they were like, this is kind of a problem. The year's real uneven. We gotta figure out something else. Like, we need like a second St. Patrick's Day. And so people are like, well, maybe we can have like half St. Patrick's Day, like the opposite end of the year. And what it ended up being was Arthur's Day, was promoted to just to have people drink Guinness. And like the whole point of the holiday was for people to drink Guinness. And it was pretty popular for a couple of years.
Speaking of made up holidays, I'm going to blow
St.
up.
Patrick's Day.
What's that?
St. Patrick's Day is a made up holiday.
Well, no, there's also our friend Carson, who's usually the silent member of the New Jersey is the World Collective. I believe Carson was heavily involved in a West Orange holiday called Sunder Day that a group of people made up, and they tried to have an eighth day of the week in between Saturday and Sunday where there were no laws and destruction was encouraged.
So I can expound on this, actually, because
I think Carson was a part of it, unless I'm mislabeling it as a Carson thing, in which case Carson edit this out. But the phrase Sunder Day comes to mind, and I feel like he was one of my friends who was had at least an acute knowledge of it.
So there, I believe that Sunder Day was based on an earlier holiday, which myself and some other folks of our group of friends started in West Orange. It became a year over year tradition called Dismantle Day. And there was a certain day of the year where everyone was encouraged to roam their school, roam the town with screwdrivers, drills, and take things apart. But the idea was you took them apart just enough so that the next person to touch or use the thing, it fell apart and they wouldn't have known. So the idea was you would take the screws 90% of the way out of door hinges. So like the door would still appear to be connected, but the next person who opened it, the door would fall off and topple down.
It's the salt shaker prank done.
Yes.
To the exponent of 10.
Yes.
If I remember, Sunder Day was a similar thing. But if I'm remembering what it really was, it was mostly a crew of West Orange kids from the Gregory area and the Valley area would descend upon South Orange and break stuff. If I remember right, it was mostly them fucking with South Orange. I will have to ask Carson to clear up the details on what Sunderday was, but that was one of my favorite made-up holidays. But yes, Dismantle Day, the first time I ever met you, because you are in my brother's grade. You were a senior when I was a freshman in high school. You came to my house, and the first words I ever spoke to my friend Mike D were, is it true that you brought tools to school and took apart all the desks and windows? I think that was the first exchange we ever had, was me asking you that. And you just kind of like quietly nodded as you stood in a corner and waited for my brother. Also created the tradition of waiting for my brother to get his shit together and leave so that you didn't have to deal with my parents. And instead of dealing with my parents, my brother's friends all then instead befriended me, because it was less awkward than just sitting with my fucking parents waiting for Greg to be ready.
And then Greg
would get mad and say that I stole his friends. And I'm like, I didn't steal your friends. Your friends became my friends because you were sound asleep or taking too long to get ready. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway. What else do we need to know about St. Patrick's Day in the great state of New Jersey?
Going back to Hoboken, because again, I can't get enough of Hoboken. So 2011 was the last year of the Hoboken parade. 34 people were arrested. 136 people were transported to hospitals via ambulance, which I want to ask you about in a second as someone who has intimate knowledge of this. Police reports cited citizens holding up various residents of an apartment building at knife point. So drunk people just going in, attempting to steal bottles of Grey Goose from a bar. Of course, it would be Grey Goose because people who steal bottles from bars think that's good liquor. And
it's that or Absolute,
yeah,
right?
But again, like the price difference. I think Grey Goose is it's very expensive. There were reports of people being beaten to a pulp by men wearing green t-shirts and jeans, which I imagine was every single person in Hoboken that day. And the city released a statement about their inability to protect spectators, bands, and participants, and the parade was canceled. So ultimately, the parade got so out of hand that the police in Hoboken were like, look, we just cannot possibly protect you from these mobs of people in green t-shirts and jeans. We're going to cancel this. At that point, I'm sure it was probably close to a 100-year-old tradition, you know. But I'm curious about the ambulance thing, because in order to be intoxicated enough to be taken by ambulance to the hospital, like, you've got to be in pretty bad shape, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, I've now been driving the ambulance out of Morris County for, I think this month marks 2 years. And I've been out on dozens of calls. And to be fair, I live in a small, sleepy town, and there's only a couple places that even have liquor licenses in my town. So it's not a place where there's tons of drinking. But I've only had one intoxicated call, and I've had, I think, over 50 calls that I've driven on. And I've had one intoxicated person, and it was someone who stole a car and flipped it. Like, it's, you have to be really, really fucked up to get drunk enough to go into an ambulance. That means every stopgap, whether it's the friends you were out drinking with, the staff of the bar, none of those people were able to stop you. Like, you are officially on a rampage. If you are drunk enough to get put in an ambulance, it means you went on a drunken rampage, because you just think of a night out drinking, even as a college kid, even when we were in New Brunswick, like, I would get out of control drinking, and my friends, it would ruin our night, but my friends would like grab me and drag me into a house and throw me into a cold shower and be like, fuck, we don't get to go out because we had to regulate like that. And that's how drinking goes with problem drinkers. To have, oh, you said over
136 people were transported by ambulance in Hoboken on St. Patrick's Day, the last year they had the parade.
I'll put this in perspective too. So I drove on two calls yesterday for the ambulance squad. One of them where I had to go to the hospital. And when I got to Morristown Medical Center, there's an area where the ambulances go, and you back into these bays to unload the stretchers. And there's probably between 20 and 30 of them, I bet, if I went to count it. And they're just kind of huge parking spots that back up right to the entrance of the emergency room. And when I got there yesterday, there were, I think, six ambulances already taking up out of those 20 or 30 bays. And I was like, fuck, it's crowded today. And the EMTs too were like, God damn. And I had to like take a spot that was not ideal to unload our patient because there were six. If there were 136 ambulances, and I'm sure they were not all there at the same time, but throughout the day, 136 drop-offs, this means you're pulling up. There might be 30 other ambulances. I went there yesterday, Mike D, and we had a guy on our stretcher. Just so, and also in case anybody's wondering, he seemed like he was going to be fine. Nothing to worry about, everybody. But like just having us there, we're doing intake and another person came in behind us and she was a woman on a stretcher who looked to be in pain. And I felt so bad because it was like, oh, we have to try to hustle and hurry up just getting name, weight, height. Are you allergic to any medications? Has anything like this happened before? Like those questions all happen at intake and there's one person behind us and everybody's like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Can you imagine if there's an endless, like the second St. Patrick's Day parade in Hoboken is the parade of drunks getting wheeled into the hospital for the same fucking thing, let alone does the hospital have to then like, you start to piece it together, you start to go like a couple weeks out, are they starting to order more fucking IV bags of saline drips and like rehydration IV drips just because they know that every goddamn asshole is going to show up on their watch in the same day? Like that has to suck so bad. You're basically acting like a military triage unit at that point because assholes want to drink.
I had a more colorful...
Want to like spray paint their hair green and get fucked up.
I had a more colorful like fantasy in my mind of this that there was something sort of like an ambulance paddy wagon. And obviously paddy wagons named after a nice Irish slur, paddy. Although I don't know. Some people say it's a slur. I don't know. Maybe I'm the wrong person. But because they would have these vans that they would fill with paddies, drunken fighting Irish people. And I was imagining it was an ambulance version of that, that they rent a U-Haul truck. And they're just like, we got so many. We don't even have enough ambulances. We just got to keep shoving people in the back of this thing and drive them around.
I can tell you as someone who volunteers to drive an ambulance that the modern day ambulance is going to be one patient at a time most of the time because of one simple thing, which is HIPAA laws, which is that you can't ask one person their medical history in front of another person. It would have to be a super severe situation where they'd put two people on. And they might, but even knowing the size of a modern ambulance, they're not fitting more than two, three if it's a absolute fiasco. So my guess is that if they had 136 patients sent to local area hospitals, that it was most likely between 100 and 136 individual ambulance rides with a series of the most pissed off EMTs and paramedics you have ever seen. Paramedics are hardworking, overworked people, and they get called in when you're seeing shit that's really actually dangerous, and I think they're heroic. They can also be so notoriously tired and grumpy, and the last thing I would want to deal with is a paramedic on his 17th alcohol poisoning call on the same day in Hoboken. I cannot imagine the type of fucking demeaning shit that was being said by all parties on this. That must have been so awful for everyone involved in the infrastructure of Hudson County because they can't send 136 people to the same hospital. So I bet if we researched the half dozen closest hospitals to Hoboken, they all lived in terror on the day of the Hoboken parade. And my guess is that we will hear from some nurses or doctors or people who works in the medical system of Hudson County who can vouch for that, is they all of Hudson County must have fucking hated that day if you worked in medicine.
I think that's why they probably ended up canceling the parade, right? Because there's, like you said, there's medical professionals who probably, like, imagine the abuse they take when a person who's drunk enough to go to the hospital but not drunk enough to be unconscious finds themselves in a hospital. So I'm sure they're horrible. Plus, all the normal people who, you know, and Hoboken is not an inexpensive place to live, right? So you've probably got, you know, average citizen there who's like, I can't have any more green vomit in my doorway. Like, I'm just trying to take my kid to Gymboree. Like, this is absurd. And then you have people fighting the police, like threatening strangers with knives, stealing booze from bars. Like, and they were just like, we're done. Like, we can't do this anymore.
They have to. It also makes me realize too, you start to think about the West Orange parade back in the day when it was really crazy and you'd see a lot of public drunkenness, but you also realize right on the end of town by Lourdes, right up the road, is Montclair Community Hospital, which is now gone. That's the hospital where I was born. Mountainside's not much farther than that. And then on the other end of town, you're not too far from St. Barnabas. I'm like, probably three very accessible hospitals allows that parade to survive and thrive because you have three set up infrastructures that know they're going to split the mayhem. Whereas if you don't have that, like there's basically three hospitals between the two ends of the West Orange parade that are very accessible. If you don't have that and you have a city as Hoboken, and I mean, the reputation of the St. Patrick's Day Hoboken parade was spread far and wide. People would dedicate themselves to traveling to Hoboken to get blackout drunk. Can you imagine? It must have been an absolute nightmare. Absolute nightmare.
Imagine what St. Patrick's Day parades in New Jersey were like before we had modern medical infrastructure. Because some of the parades, I think Newark goes back to 1867, you know, so this was happening. So before you even had cars, I mean, it must have just been like gangs in New York, just people just in the gutter. And then, you know, they would just leave them there until the next day. And whoever survived to walk it off and have a rough day. And who didn't, they probably just dumped them into the green Passaic River.
I've done comedy upstairs at Kilkenny's Tavern. It's been there forever in Newark. Justin Williams runs a great show called the Brick City Comedy Review. I've done it a couple times. Awesome show. Justin's a great comic, great guy. And that bar, I think, is one of the big hubs for a lot of the area, St. Pat. Like, I think West Orange has a fundraiser there. I think the Newark Parade does a lot. I think it's a hub for St. Patrick's Day activity, much in the way the Shillelagh Club in West Orange is one of these regional hubs of like drum beating and money raising for the parades. And I can absolutely see it 100 years ago being a place where people were waking up on the sidewalk right outside of Kilkenny's.
We do have a good Newark St. Patrick's Day crime story.
Let's hear it.
We've talked about Newark endlessly on this show, so I won't do all the caveats. Like, yes, we get it. It's, you know, there's a lot of things going on there. It's complicated, but to simplify the story, there were and still are certain parts of Newark that are mob controlled. You know, that's just a fact. And as you know, mobsters are Italian, generally speaking. There's a couple exceptions, a little bit of Irish mob, and now we've got some other mobs moving in. But in the late 80s, during the Newark St. Patrick's Day parade, there was a group of Irishmen celebrating the parade, and they wandered a little too far off the parade route into an Italian mob-controlled neighborhood. And a wild brawl broke out where dozens of people were beaten and stabbed because they wandered off the parade route, and there was an Italian group defending their neighborhood from Irish parade revelers, which feels like a very Newark thing to me. Like, you can have your parade, but the minute, you know, you cross North 6th Street and come onto our block, all bets are off. Like, we're fighting. I think that's kind of amazing.
That is a very grim Essex County thing that I can imagine. Arbitrarily, this is the point at which if you cross over here, we got to fight. That's very much speaks to the area where we grew up.
Like, they'll let you have the parade, but it has to be on a predetermined route that does not cross into certain neighborhoods.
It's not shocking at all. And there's nothing about it that surprises me.
Well, Jersey City in the mid-90s, St. Patrick's Day after party, people are playing darts. And the darts game turned into a fatal brawl where people started killing each other over games of darts.
Over darts.
It's weird. And I don't even think that New Jersey should celebrate St. Patrick's Day anymore. I really don't. I mean, if this is the result, does it make sense to keep having this holiday where every year hundreds of people are taken to hospitals, shot, stabbed? And really, you can drink any day of the week that you like if that's your thing. And also, the food is not good. Like, corned beef and cabbage is gross.
You and I have not talked too in depth. You've got Italian, you've got Irish sides of your family. And it is true, the Italian, like, not only do you have the Italian side of your family, but you're the Italian side of your family, I've eaten at family gatherings of yours with your family. These are people who cook a mean meal and also know where to go all over Jersey for the best, most authentic stuff. The disappointment of Irish food must have been a stain on the, a strain on those two halves of your family getting along.
This is an actual conversation that I had with my mother last week. So last week, so my mom is married to someone who is not Italian, and every year she is asked to prepare corned beef and cabbage. And she called me up last week. She's like, you know, Sunday I'm going to make corned beef and cabbage, that Metagon fucking garbage. And this is like her basically saying, like, I know this stuff is awful and I'm going to cook it because I'm a nice person. But I mean, she cooked, I don't know, pounds and pounds of corned beef and invited everyone over. But like she herself, nor did I like go anywhere near corned beef. You know, she also made macaroni on the side for us. So, but I think that's kind of hilarious. Like, she's just not even having it.
I would be, the part of me that, like, my mom rolls my eyes at every asshole throw on a green shirt and get fucked up. I do think, you know, the part of you that's saying cancel St. Patrick's Day, I'm like, there is a part of me that does find it incredibly sad. Because I am not the type of person that refers to myself as Irish very often, maybe in shorthand, but I'm very well aware that I'm an Irish American, and that's a different thing, and that people in Ireland right now roll their eyes very hard at how many Irish Americans roll their eyes at it, or try to claim it. That being said, I'm like, I'm an Irish citizen. I have an EU passport because my grandfather was from there and I turned in all the paperwork. I've got my citizenship. I knew my grandfather very well, knew my grandmother even better. They were from there. I was very well aware that they left one country and that's why I got to grow up in New Jersey, was because they sacrificed. This was not something that was held over my head, but it was not a secret by any means. And I do sometimes find it very sad. Especially because, you know, my mom's side of the family, there was no small amount of, you know, alcoholism either along the way, myself included. You, one of the few friends in my life who has seen me drunk. And Mike D, you can vouch for me. Like, there are some of those stories I will tell and we'll talk about the funny punchlines. But by and large, seeing me drunk was not funny.
It was sad.
In my early 20s. It was sad.
No, it was sad.
It was very, very concerning to people who cared about me. And you were one of those people. And you were one of those people who sometimes had some heart-to-hearts with me along the way. And I've always joked, like, when we get together with our college buddies, there's never been one moment, like, when everybody starts drinking, it's like, oh, we're going to go to the Poconos for the weekend, blah, 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 and everybody's drinking. Oh, we got to run to the liquor store and get a big bottle before it closes. We got to make sure we got enough beers. There's never been one person from that era of my life who's been like, Chris, we're all just crashing here for 2 days anyway. You don't got to drive. You don't want to just have one. Like, no one would ever. No one who saw me drunk would ever. So the fact that I'm descended from a culture where I'm very in touch with my grandparents, who were the touchstones, like, this is not a faraway theoretical thing for me. They grew up, I mean, I lived on Allen Street. They grew up at the corner of Wilson and Eagle Rock. If you jump on Google Maps right now, you'll realize, oh, that's a 5-minute walk, you know? And on my dad's side, my grandmother's maiden name was Cunningham, you know? And the Cunninghams are all over West Orange. That's an old school Irish family right there. The fact that the holiday we have to celebrate the culture I'm descended from has come to be the shorthand for everyone to opt into alcoholic behavior is a bummer. And I've made jokes about it. I did for a while try to work on a stand-up joke where the premise was, can you imagine if we had parades for other cultures? Like, if there was an Italian-American parade where it was like everyone dress up as a bomb-throwing anarchist. We would not allow that, you know? Like, we wouldn't allow it. But Ireland, which has a rich history, a history that's tied into New Jersey very intimately, a history with a lot of pain, a history with a lot of stories that were intentionally tried to, you know, a history that was almost intentionally erased by an oppressive occupier. Like, the fact that the way we celebrate it is like, hey, anybody who's 1/15th Irish or any other ethnicity, throw on some green shit and get blackout drunk. It does bum me out. So on that level, I would not mind to see it canceled as a holiday. But that being said, growing up down the hill in West Orange, goddamn parade day is fun, and I can't fully get on board. I can't fully get on board. I'd miss it.
I mean, you summed it up for me. It's for me, I mean, and you know, it's a well-known fact that I do not like large crowds of people. I especially do not like large crowds of drunk people. But I think it's actually kind of sad because there are all these other interesting things about Ireland. But in New Jersey, like what we've done is just distill it down to like, being Irish is about being drunk. And that's very, very sad. You know, that is not what it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the alternative would be, what the like, you know, if people start playing like tin whistle music in their house, like, I don't know what the answer is. They start reading Keats poems, like, you know.
I had a girlfriend in high school who was real into Irish dance, like that river dance stuff. And there's a whole world in New Jersey of Irish dance competitions and people who take it super seriously. But that's not what gets talked about the second, third weekend in March, right? Like, part of it too is that the food is bad. Like, who really wants to have a holiday where you're eating Irish soda bread? It's dense, thick bread. It's like
and that's the best of the lot of things, I would say.
Yeah, that's one of the better options out there, is if you can get a whole lot of butter on some Irish soda bread, it's pretty good. But think about what that is. It's like eating a sponge.
Yeah, it's just dense
bread.
That's
the best we've got. But that being said, it's probably for the best that at the very least, hobo can chill the fuck out. At the very least, that one needed to go, and it's probably for the best that it did.
And I think, though, some of that has been, the Hoboken vibe has been transferred down the shore to, like, Belmar, right? Which now has another sort of out-of-control St. Patrick's Day thing going on, which Bonaduce was reporting on to me the other day.
I think, like I said, Morristown, the parade is lovely, but you go there in the hours after, it's chaos. West Orange, you and I have joked so much, but it's probably not for the best that we saw grown-ups fighting in the streets, pissing on the sides of buildings when we were kids. It's a strange choice for a holiday. I am proud of my roots. I do feel more in touch with them than a lot of people, and I worked hard to make sure I like honored that. But yeah, as someone who quit drinking in my early 20s, because when I would get drunk, I was like, oh, I've seen this in my family and I've heard stories about this in my family and I got to cut it off right now. Yeah, it's not the funniest thing in the world, let alone as a volunteer ambulance driver. I cannot imagine how many people quit working on EMT squads in Hudson County specifically because of St. Patrick's Day.
It just made me think, though, it's St. Patrick's Day in New Jersey is like Irish cosplay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's Irish face.
Yeah, it is. You put on one of those like flat caps, which again, I don't think like most people in Ireland are walking around with those hats. Like some people are, you know, much, much older people. You put on one of those, like an Aran sweater. You pick up a shillelagh, which is just a club that people walked around with to beat people with.
And that's if you're really trying.
Right, if you're working
like
hard.
Some people are just straight up wearing like big cardboard sunglasses and green beads. Some people, that's where they take it.
I actually had a... Bonaduce and I were out yesterday having a little bit of an adventure, and we ended the day grabbing dinner at an Irish pub in my town, which you and I have been to before for dinner because they have really good food. And when we got there, it was obviously completely out of control, and most people were wearing Irish Mardi Gras beads, Kiss Me I'm Irish shirts, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, Irish face is a great way to describe what this is.
Well, this was a hell of a conversation. Shocking, honest, real, and as you titled it in the document, Aaron, go fuck yourself, everybody.
But remember, now it's time for, I think, what everybody's been waiting for, the monologue that I'm going to ask you to deliver. And I think you did a really good job of setting this up because you have stayed close to your Irish heritage. So I think that will help bring this monologue to life.
Oh, Mike D, what are you making me do? Is the idea here that I have to use an Irish brogue to read this?
Well, it's written in an Irish brogue.
I am very bad at accents. And my grandfather also had a really thick Northern Irish accent that he developed in the 1910s and 20s. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to nail this, but I will do my best.
I mean, you are a professional actor. I mean,
oh, this is not going to be good. Okay. A St. Patrick's Day monologue written by Mike D. My guess is written by Mike D and some AI service, which I'm also morally opposed to.
I did use an English to Irish AI translation service.
Okay.
Which translates things into pidgin Irish.
Oh, dude, people are going to be mad. You're making me this. Okay. Up until I had salmonella, I thought I knew what diarrhea is all about. Eat something that doesn't agree with your system. Eat too much fruit, prunes, etc. You experience frequent loose stools. That is what most people think when they think about diarrhea. What do you like? However, the diarrhea I experienced with salmonella was like nothing I had ever had before. What do you like? Started fairly quickly. In fact, I was down feeding my chickens, came back to the house, about 50 feet or so, and I almost didn't make it to the bathroom in time. It was that sudden and that intense. What are you like? Why does it keep saying, what are you like? That's the AI. All that night, I was up and down constantly with it. The next day, I was still sick with a fever and a constant diarrhea, which is now totally liquid. I had a hard time making it from me bed to the bathroom, but I made it through the night. The other problem was the terrible thirst I was then experiencing as my body became extremely dehydrated. The next day, I called my nephew, who lives next door to me, and asked him to bring me some Gatorade, some ginger ale, which he did. Still didn't really understand what kind of danger I was in. But finally, I wasn't making it to the bathroom and was pooping my pants. It was then that I texted my daughter, who works in a hospital, to ask her to bring me a bedpan since I wasn't making it to the bathroom. I believe I was somewhat delirious since my daughter called me right after reading the text. I explained the problem to her as best as I can remember, and she told me to get my nephew to drive me to the hospital. And my response was, I can't because I'll poop my pants on the way. Yes, I believe I was pretty out of it by then. Sick comes to my house immediately, gave me 2 Imodium, tried to get me to put on some Depends for the trip to the hospital. I was so weak by that time that I couldn't even manage that. At that point, my doctor told me, you have to put these on. If you don't, then we'll have to call the ambulance. What are you like? I was so guan, I just said, call him. Now, Mike T, in an episode where we were talking about being blackout drunk, we avoided talking about diarrhea when it was finally warranted. And then you quadrupled down on our diarrhea obsession here on New Jersey is the World with this ending monologue.
I mean, as Andrea will say, she's shocked when an episode comes up where it does not end this way.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody, to New Jersey is the World. We want your opinions on St. Patrick's Day. I really, really love it. I also really, really shake my head at it, and I'd like to know where people land. Thanks so much for listening.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? This is the voice of super producer and editor Carson Kopp here to wrap up the old episode for you. Nothing to add. Mike and Geth pretty much echoed everything that I feel about St. Patrick's Day. Outside of St. Patrick's Day strikes me kind of the day itself is an encapsulation of what alcoholism actually is. In that, it starts way too early in the day, / in your youth, and if you hang around too long and do it for too long, by the end, it's just sad and empty, and the police have to get involved. I want to give a huge shout out to Geth for mentioning Sunderday. Sunderday was a real thing that I have not thought of in 30 years. Me and my fellow miscreants from the Gregory area in West Orange would gather together on Sunday. And I think Sunderday, I don't remember. I can only vaguely remember that it was like Thunder Sundays. So Sunderday. And yes, it existed outside of the realm of time and space. It wasn't an eighth day of the week. It was kind of a 7.5 day of the week that was a little slip in time into a Narnia of teenage dirtbaggery where me and my crew would walk all the way out from West Orange to South Orange, sometimes all the way out to Summit, and commit random acts of petty suburban crime. Vandalism. Pushing over porta potties, kicking in people's garbage cans, stealing bikes, but only kind of walking with them for a block or two, and then parking them somewhere else, or throwing them up in a tree. You know, dumb shit like that. Dumb shit like that. You know, the type of shit that you do when you're an adult, kind of, and you have too much time on your hands, and you walk home drunk from the bar. Anyway, you're walking alone. You are most certainly walking alone. That's the difference. Anyway, and here's the pitch. New Jersey is the world. You can find us on the greater internet at newjerseyistheworld.com. You can find us on Instagram at newjerseyistheworld. You can find us on patreon.com after searching for New Jersey is the World, or you can find us wherever you find podcasts. Now, the most important part of these wrap-ups is that we implore you to call the home office here at New Jersey is the World and leave a message on our answering machine by dialing 973-780-4660. That's 973-780-4660. And leave a message in regards to anything that you'd like to comment on that you've heard on New Jersey is the World. Things that you have not heard. Adventures, stories, your own Sunderday stories. anecdotes all relating to New Jersey. And we will peel through them, pick out the cream of the crop, and we will comment on them live on a previously recorded episode of a show that we call the Garden State Gagoots, where all the hosts from all the shows here on our lovely little network comment on them and offer your feedback. Feedback. Radio infamy awaits you. Bang that line, baby. All right, that's all I got for you this week. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful week. And we will talk to you soon. And remember to tell your friends, tell your family, that which we already know to be true, which is that New Jersey is the world. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good one.